my friend. You know what that means? Time for a little bit more Tasty Live with this man, Chris. And let me explain. Chris, how are you?
Doing well, guys. Doing well. How are you?
Doing well myself. Doing well myself. Tom, how are you doing today?
You know, that's a good question. I think the jury is still out. You know what stock's bothering me the most is Coinbase.
I was going to say Coin.
That stock is
up $7.
That stock is the thorn in my side.
Now it's up $6. It moves a dollar at a clip, by the way.
Yeah, well, Bitcoin has moved around from down, let's call it 600 or 700, to up 600 or 700. But like,
it's flirting with new highs.
I still don't understand the relationship here
between
Coinbase and Bitcoin.
Oh.
I don't.
Yeah, all right, okay.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
Missing,
I don't know,
something.
Maybe this, the same thing like in the stock market. You know, when things go higher, you know, the thing is, let's buy more, and then we got to store it somewhere. And I guess you go to Coinbase. I don't know.
How do they make any money on that?
I have to imagine the more inventory they have.
On what?
Fees.
The fees. More money they make. It's not. That's.
I mean, how does any company
make? So you make $100 and your stock goes up by $1,000.
That's neither here nor there. I mean, we don't have to do the math, but I mean, gee, you don't have to be a fun vacuum sodding up your whole entire life.
Oh. Yeah, but isn't there a sense in crypto where there's this very significant positive feedback loop where price goes up and so it draws in more interest, which helps catapult price higher, and therefore there's going to be more trading activity on platforms like Coinbase as long as Bitcoin prices continue to go up?
Well, there's no question that you know, there's more activity on Coinbase now, not just because Bitcoin's going higher, but because it's carrying, you know, coattails in the entire altcoin space. Everything is more active now, you know, like, so all the crap coins, everything that's, you know, everything that you can't trade anywhere else. Like, who would have thought that the regulators in their own using their own genius would have, for all the wrong reasons, pushed all the business to Coinbase? They basically eliminated all the other brokerage firms from participating because of the various rules from SAB 121 to all the other rules about, you know, what's a security and what's not. They've essentially eliminated crypto trading at every other firm in America except for Coinbase.
Did you just ask why regulators did something that was short-sighted? I mean,
I'm not so sure.
It seems pretty par for the course.
I don't know if it's the short-sighted part as much as it is. I don't think that they realized that they were pushing, like, the whole purpose of regulatory bodies is to protect the consumer. And what happened is the consumer had lots of different choices. So a Chris Vecchio could have, if you wanted to trade, let's just say Solana or Cardano or anything, any other, you know, any coin out there, any one of, let's call 30 or 40 of the top coins, you could have done that at Tasty and a lot of other firms. You know, you could have done it at Tasty, you could have done it at Robinhood, you could have done it at Interactive Brokers, you could have done it with your brokerage firm. But all of a sudden, the regulators come along and they say, you guys can't offer anything except Bitcoin and ETH, okay? And if you do continue to offer everything else, we're going to fine you, and then you're going to pay millions of dollars in fines. You don't make any money in this, so it makes no sense. So every firm said, fine, we're going to be out of the business, right? We're just going to offer Bitcoin and ETH. That's all we're allowed to do. That's essentially what the regulators said. So they said, if you want to trade in those other coins, you're going to have to go to Coinbase because we're challenging them on a whole different thing. But they're not an online broker. They're a crypto exchange. That's the distinction. So all the business got moved. All that business, there's no FTX. There's no real crypto.com anymore in the U.S. There's no Binance, essentially. And all that business from all those, you know, different crypto exchanges essentially went to Coinbase. Because, and what sucks about that from a regulatory side is our fees at Tasty are one less than half of what they are at Coinbase.
Sure.
So if you are, we have caps and we have minimal fees. Like, our fees for trading Bitcoin and ETH are less than, I think, one We're one third of Robinhood.
Oh, those. Oh, I don't know Robinhood.
We're like one third of Robinhood. We're like less than half of Coinbase. You know, we're less than half of Interactive Brokers. That's what we charge. Like, so our fees are minimal. We do it as like an accommodation, but customers can't take advantage of that anymore because they won't let us offer the products.
Well, I mean, that's Coinbase's big problem because
no, that's, you know, our big problem. That's the and well, the SEC's big problem.
No, I understand. I'm thinking about the now, like, what's the trade, right, within this? Because these fees that Coinbase makes, if you're buying it, just think you're going to the store. There's two loaves of bread. They're basically both identical. One's $5, one's $7. You're going to buy the $5 one. Coinbase's fees now with these ETF products, there's really no reason to trade Bitcoin through them at all. It's a cost inefficient way of executing your idea in the market, plain and simple. And so over time, what's going to happen, in my opinion, you're going to see that the share of Bitcoin transactions as a portion of Coinbase's total revenue will drop. The other coins, altcoins and what have you, will grow in size just by a function of the Bitcoin pie getting smaller. And during the next big downswing, when people stop trading these altcoins and these other level two coins, whatever, L1 coins, Coinbase is going to be in really deep trouble. Period, end of story. So these rallies in Coinbase, yeah, they may make sense because Bitcoin's going up, and I suppose that this means more people are trading because of this positive feedback loop. But Mara, Riot, like, you don't need any of these intermediary steps now to have a proxy for Bitcoin. When you were an advisor before and the Bitcoin was not in a regulated product, it was very difficult to allocate client capital there. But you could say, well, there's no real Bitcoin ETF, so I'm going to buy MicroStrategy. I'm going to buy these proxies for you because they're so closely tied to the price of Bitcoin. Now you no longer need to invest in those stocks. You can just go to iBit, for example. And so there's real challenges for these companies. I would rather fade the hell out of any of these moves higher, Marathon, Riot, Coinbase, than anything else. Long iBit, long Bitcoin, short any of these. That's the pair trade for me.
Taiwanese sources say they're halving Bitcoin in April also.
Yeah they're halving Bitcoin.
So then you have to use the same amount of energy to mine less coin, so that maybe that's hurting.
But it's a supply-demand imbalance right now.
That's Bitcoin, the story that's hurting the miners. But.
Right, but they also said at the same time that, you know, Bitcoin was trading around $35,000, $40,000, that it would have a pressure on the price of Bitcoin, and Bitcoin doubled since then.
Yeah, so, I
who knows?
I'm not so sure it's a bad... I think the worst thing the regulators did was basically eliminate the competition, unintentionally eliminate the competition. And I think that's really bad. Because like I said, our fees are half of what Coinbase's are. They're a third of what Robinhood's are. And for individual investors,
they lose again.
You lose. That's the beat that doesn't make any sense to me. So anyway, all right, Chris, what do you want to talk about? I didn't want to get sidetracked on this.
No problem. You know, what's been happening in gold and silver, obviously, is catching a lot of people's attention. I also think it's an important, instructive lesson why it's very difficult to be short calls in precious metals, because unlike other asset classes, gold and silver tend to have some sort of positive correlation over time with volatility. It's not perfect. It's not all the time. But when gold prices spike higher, when people panic buy gold, volatility usually comes along with it. So being short calls in gold is a very difficult endeavor. But, you know, we've seen this surprising move higher. All of a sudden, when we were meandering around 2040, 2050 for the past several weeks, we find ourselves back trading to the levels that we haven't seen since December 3rd, which was the night that both of you guys were off of first call. So it was Ilya, Pete, and I manning the ship, and you get this, you know, fat finger move to the upside. All of a sudden, we're right back into that territory now after what's been an explosive 3 days of trading. What may be the cause of this here? I actually have had a very difficult time trying to figure out what's happening in gold, because you look at real yields and yes, they're down 15 basis points from where they were 2 weeks ago, but gold's back at levels where we were in early December. And the 10-year real yield, for example, was trading closer to 1.65% at the time, not 1.89% like it is now. There's no big geopolitical thing going on. What's happening in oil prices? You can't point to it there. This to me is ultimately long overdue for what's happening in the metals space. I think it's a safer way to play this through not trying to short calls here, but quite frankly, looking for ways to be long if it's via short puts or long at the money call spread. Selling calls right now in gold because of the high IVR is very tempting, but it can be an ill-fated move just because of how this particular market is structured and moves. Silver to me leading the way higher in the high beta sense is a very positive sign for precious metals. I don't think this move is done yet, and people should not ignore it, even if gold has been a stick in the mud effectively for the past 3 or 4 months.
Yeah. I couldn't disagree more, you know, on gold. I've been looking to try to get short it myself by selling, you know, something with a, some sort of ratio spread, 1/2, 1/3, something in there. I think gold has gone too far, too fast, and I'm looking for a little bit of price action to the downside. That's my opinion, right? I mean, a direction is a 50-50 shot. The strategy will have a 70-80% pop. That's what I'm looking to do. High IV rank for me. And maybe even a little bit of call skew sets it up for a nice strategy, in my ideas.
I've been trading gold and silver.
I've been trading the
gold-silver ratio. It's okay. It's trading back and forth. You know, I don't know if it's wrapped around 90 right now. It's got as low as 88, as high as 91. But it's been trading a pretty narrow range. But that's been okay. But I've also shorts a little bit of premium in gold, which has not worked because, you know, this up move kind of got away a little bit away from me to the upside. But silver to me is almost untradeable unless you're doing gold silver ratio. Some people have had some success in silver. I find the commodity options to be too illiquid and the SLV options to be too cheap. But gold and a few of the gold likes ETFs are definitely tradable, you know. But it's a one trick pony. That's my issue with gold, is that it's just, you know, it's. You're one and done. Mm-hmm. There's nothing else there. You know, you're going to put a GLD position on. Okay, fine. Now you're done. Move on. It has no correlation. It really has no correlation to the market. I mean, it has lately, the last couple, but that's just because both have gone higher. But generally speaking, you know, the gold correlation to the market is almost nil. So, yeah, it fits every portfolio. Everybody should have, with high implied
volatility. Well, that's exactly right there. One of the reasons why, right?
Yeah.
You got to introduce diversified strategies, time horizons. Yeah. You know, positions, yeah. Products, and because it's so uncorrelated and it's moving, it's definitely worth taking a look at. It's one of the reasons why you always keep an eye on something like oil or natural gas, because they're uncorrelated with the rest of the market.
Yeah, and that's the same reason you put a gold position on, but that's all there is in gold. I don't think there's a story other than the fact that it's a non-correlated underlying, that in the case it has an ETF that, and it has futures options and an ETF that very tradable. Mm. And if you want to do the pair, the gold-silver pair, there's even a fairly liquid micro products that actually have pretty big daily swings. So the mini gold-silver pair moves about, can move up to $1,000 or $2,000 a day on extreme cases. But the micro moves, you know, like $100 to $200 a day, which is a pretty good move for most people, which is... /SIL and MGC, and it's very tradable. You know, the SIL, the /SIL doesn't trade that much, but it's definitely liquid enough to trade, especially ones, twos, and threes. And if you're trading gold and silver, don't go bigger than like a one lot. It's a big trade, that gold silver pairs trade. It's big. And if you're trading options in there, the gold options are one tick around mid price on the future side. And if you're doing GLD, they're 1 to 2 ticks on every spread. So it's pretty damn liquid. All right, what else you got?
Well, I think the gold move actually is important because it sets up something more interesting in bonds. Yesterday, gold was moving. The past 2 days, gold has been moving without really anything else rate sensitive following along with it. But now you're seeing participation by bonds here. Look, ZB, ZN, we're talking about trading back to the levels that we were at the peak before the CPI release on February 13th, so much for all that angst being built into the market. I would also point out that one of the lines that we've been taking here the past several weeks has been, you're basically making a bet against bonds as it pertains to whether or not there's gonna be a rate cut in the first half of this year. And the market has effectively settled in where there's right around a 60% chance of a cut by June, but nothing else is priced in until then. So that really becomes the focal point here in the bond trade right now. I think long ZB looks really good, quite frankly, at these levels. We got through 119, and 2022, an area that proved to be support running into CPI was resistance thereafter. Now we've put in that little bit of a bottoming effort. You're seeing that obviously contemporaneous confirmation in gold prices too. Whether or not that's something that's good for the market is another story unto itself, because in the day like today, bonds are up and stocks are down. Maybe it's a decoupling of everything being so rate sensitive moving forward. Obviously one day doesn't make a trend, but this week is an important week for bonds because we're gonna hear from Fed Chair Powell twice up on Capitol Hill. We're gonna have the non-farm payrolls report on Friday. In fact, at the top of this hour, we're gonna have the ISM services report in less than 1 minute's time. just in terms of shaping expectations for Powell, however, because a lot of people in financial media make a big hubbub of this. This is a testimony on Capitol Hill. Powell and any other Fed chair does not want to be there, which means they're not going to say anything that gives policymakers, elected officials, any sort of excuse to drag them back there because they said something that was out of line or promised a policy change that never ultimately transpired. Powell will say exactly everything that we know that he's said thus far up until this point in time. There will be nothing new. If you're looking for fireworks, the fireworks potentially come in the Q&A session when you have partisan hacks on both the left and the right lobbying for potential political points that they can use for, you know, re-election bids later this fall. Outside of that, though, this is not going to be a big bombshell event. It's been a very long time since a Fed chair has made the mistake of testifying of anything important in front of Congress, and that was Bernanke that kicked off the taper tantrum. It's been 10 plus years, so don't expect Powell to tell us something that we don't already know. I think that puts a cap on what could be a potentially misunderstood piece of event risk this week here. Other than that, though, guys, non-farm payrolls on Friday, that's the potential game changer. Until then, keep doing what we've been doing. I'm looking for ways to get long stocks, obviously, still continuing to stay long the ES call spread, short the Russell put spread. It's working. Keep going back to that well until it runs dry. Eventually, it's going to stop working. But until then, I see no reason to try to be a hero and call the top.
Yeah, you said that last
week.
Week
before.
And it's worked.
Well, we have remained, I mean, when bonds got down to 118, and actually they traded the 117 handle, we have been on the long side of these bonds the entire time. And we've been selling puts, we've been long bonds, we're still long bonds. It's been a nice
little... just had a big bump higher here on ISM. ZB's up at 121.07 now.
Yeah, so we have stayed long bonds, actually long notes until 2 days ago. And we are long bonds here. We have the 117, 125 on right now. We're probably going to roll up some. I can do it while we're sitting here talking.
Oh, can you?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, I put on the long 116 call, short 125 call yesterday, April 26 expiry, 52 days out.
Yeah, you probably want to. You probably want to roll up those puts a little bit. And
no. Long the call spread, not short the puts, because volatility is so low. And I'm directionally bullish. And when vol's low, I'd rather have the convexity of the upside move as opposed to saying, I think this thing's going to stop falling and just stay here, which has been the trade for the past 2 weeks, just the market's going to stop falling.
Yeah.
But now, yesterday I felt like this thing was getting ready to pop given what was happening in gold. So I laid on that position and it's obviously working pretty nicely here today.
Yeah. We've stayed long bonds and been drifting, you know, been pushing our position a little higher. But, you know, again, bonds are a complementary position to everything else right now. I wouldn't consider them I don't consider them a lead position. I consider them a complementary position. They're just like gold. They're kind of like a one-trick pony. And, you know, based on where we are seeing all the trade activity for the last, I would say, couple of weeks, it's all been in equities. I mean, when you look at where the notional flow is going. It's not going into futures. It's not going into the indexes. It's really been going into individual equities, a little bit into digital assets, but mostly into equities.
Oh, you can see that in the positioning data as well. One thing that was noticeable about last week in the futures market that, in fact, over the past 2 weeks, net longs for gold have been declining and more trading volume has gone into ES and NQ futures. So it feels like, and you could actually see this with BTC futures as well, it feels like people have been saying, what's moving? I may feel good about the outlook for gold prices, but they're not moving right now. So I'm going to allocate incremental dollars into stocks, into something that has some convexity in the short term. And so a lot of people actually missed last week's gold move. We're near the lowest level of net longs, basically 2 weeks removed from that in the gold market. So people just haven't been trading it. And they're not trading it because other things are moving a lot more right now. But there's so much time spent here. You guys are talking about individual stock names. I think that bonds for people who don't necessarily look in that direction, again, bringing uncorrelated assets into your portfolio can help because then it allows you actually to lean a little bit more into the stock direction because you have a little bit more wiggle room. You're not putting so many eggs in one basket. I think that's underrated. You don't want to do that, plain and simple. I certainly have had my worst experience. My worst experience trading ever was when I was net long Swiss franc in 2011. all summer long, kept cascading in short dollar Swiss, short euro Swiss, short Aussie Swiss. I mean, everything to the sun, long Swiss franc. And then September 6, 2011 happens. They put in the floor in euro Swiss, and I see a position go into margin call like that. So I'm very big on diversification, even if it's just for trading.
Well,
not going to get bit in the ass like that again.
We remember that move, and that's why we haven't offered the Swiss franc since.
Well, size always kills, too.
As a brokerage firm, we remember it quite well, and we just didn't want to deal with any of that crap. So I think we haven't offered the Swiss franc, right? We don't have it on our platform now, do we?
I know of.
No, there's no Swiss franc futures, Tom. That morning, I was working the European shift those days, 4 a.m. until noon. And so at 4:30 a.m., I hear someone running down the hallway just cursing F-word at the top of their lungs and sprinting by. I'm like, huh? And I look back at my screen and I see this big bar, and I hear my platform ding. It's like, what just happened? What just happened to my money?
No.
That was not fun. Yeah. That was not fun.
Yeah, I can completely appreciate that, because I remember that day. And yeah, it wasn't fun. And I don't think we lost any money. I had no position on there. I don't think we lost any money as a firm. But at that point, you know, there were a couple of pissed off customers. It wasn't our fault.
Yeah, right. Sorry. Didn't realize you were the head of the S&P, Tom.
Yeah. So, all right. What do you got here? Closing stuff.
What else is there to say? I haven't talked much about stocks. I'm just going to stay on that drumbeat. But in terms of programming later today, obviously Futures Power Hour, 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 Central Time. We're going to have overtime, 4 p.m. And then Tuesdays, I join Victor Jones on his new show, Price of Truth, as a co-host. So be sure to join us there today. Great conversations with people across the trading world coming up over the next few weeks.
Good. So you're doing the show with him tonight?
Yes, sir.
Perfect.
Beautiful. Awesome. Good job. Good job out of you. Good job out of him. Even the S&P down 22 would take a quick 90-second break. The Russell actually catching a bid down only $3.20. You listen to Tasty Live. We'll have more after this with a market measure. Thank you, Chris.
You know what's not catching a bid? Apple.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Live, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live, Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live, Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing broker.